Richard Philip Cavallaro Studio.
WWRHU.
Hempstead.
You discovered.
A cornerstone of the Lawrence Herbert School of Communication.
WWRHU.
Now, Long Island's largest radio news team brings you the Associated Press award-winning program, Newsline.
Newsline.
Coming up on Newsline, April 7th, 2022.
There will be a new Supreme Court justice.
And we give you updates on the war in Ukraine.
In health, the CDC is set to lift a public health order and the Biden administration starts offering COVID-19 vaccinations to immigrants. I'm Cody Millar, and I'll have that later in the broadcast.
In entertainment, Ye gets replaced as a headliner at Coachella, and Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker got married. Not really. I'm Lindsay Hill, and I'll have that and more later in the broadcast.
Newsline. Breaking news.
We begin tonight's broadcast in New York. New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced a conceptual agreement for the state budget today. Included in the budget is the state's plans to suspend its gas tax starting June 1st. The move comes as gas prices have soared in the midst of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The gas tax will be suspended through the end of the year and is expected to save drivers approximately 16 cents per gallon. In addition, New York State is legalizing alcohol to go drinks. The new budget will also invest $7 billion in child care. The legislation is expected to cost $220 billion. Votes are expected to begin tonight.
The House and the Senate have voted to end normal trade relations with Russia. The House voted 420-3 in support of the bill. The only three representatives to vote no were Representative Matt Gaetz from Florida, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, and Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky. The Senate voted an overwhelming 100-0. Congress also voted on an embargo that would ban oil imports from Russia. And the United Nations General Assembly has voted to suspend Russia from the Human Rights Council. 93 countries voted in favor of the resolution, 24 voted against it, and 58 abstained. This is the first time a permanent member of the UN Security Council has been removed from a post, and this is the second time that any country has had its membership revoked from the Human Rights Council. Russia's suspension is the result of a U.S.-led effort launched as a direct response to horrific images of bodies left behind in Bucha and other towns after Russian forces withdrew. Russia has denied all responsibility.
Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is officially the first black woman to sit on the nation's highest court.
On this vote, the yeas are 53, the nays are 47, and this nomination is confirmed.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer calls it an even greater moment for America as the Senate gallery rally in applause for Jackson. Democrats already had enough votes to confirm Jackson. However, three Republicans joined them. Senator Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney voted to confirm President Joe Biden's nominee. Jackson will not be sworn in until Justice Stephen Breyer retires in the summer. When Jackson is sworn in, the courts will maintain its 6-3 conservative majority. SCOTUS Blog's Katie Barlow joins us later in today's broadcast to break it all down.
Coming up after your Newsline Business Report with Cody Millar, a woman steals $750,000, and a shooting closes Roosevelt Field Mall. But first, your Newsline traffic and weather update with Nicholas Cavello-Macchia. WRHU News Time is 5:34.
Newsline. Up to the minute, local traffic.
There's mounted traffic on the Southern State Parkway heading eastbound as the brakes are pumping on the LIE on Woodhaven Boulevard. And there's mounted traffic at Hempstead Turnpike near Hofstra University. Moving over to the rails, there is no scheduled service on Belmont Park and all lines are on or close to schedule. Up in the sky, there are ground delays at JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark. But as always, please check with your carrier before heading out. It's currently 51 degrees and rainy outside our studios in Hempstead. Expect temperatures to drop to a cool 48 degrees. And you can put away the umbrellas tomorrow and expect sunny skies throughout tomorrow with a high of 60 degrees and a low of 45 degrees. With your Newsline traffic update, I'm Nicholas Cavello-Macchia, and I'll be back with another update coming up later in the broadcast.
The Center for Disease Control and Prevention announced this Friday it would lift an emergency public health order to restrict immigration at U.S. land borders. Since the beginning of the pandemic, citing, quote, current public health conditions and an increased availability of tools to fight COVID-19. This will go into effect on May 23rd. Federal officials see thousands of immigrants at the southwestern border every day due to the policy change, in addition to the already high number of people who have been arriving over the past year from Latin America and across the globe. The Biden administration began offering vaccinations to undocumented migrants at the border this week, about 2,000 a day along 11 areas of the border. The department said in the next few weeks that number will go up to 6,000 vaccinations a day at 27 locations. The order has been used to expel migrants about 1.7 million times over the past 2 years. The CDC has not disclosed any documentation validating undocumented immigrants were a factor in the spread of the coronavirus. A panel of judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit wrote in a ruling in March on a case about the public health rule, quote, it's far from clear that the CDC's order serves any purpose. Dr. Anthony Fauci has said immigrants were not a driving force in the spread of the coronavirus in the United States. On CNN, Fauci said in October, quote, focusing on immigrants, expelling them, or what have you, is not the solution to an outbreak. Reporting for WRHU, I'm Cody Millar.
WRHU News Time is 5:36. Our thanks to Nick and Cody for those reports. Joining us today to discuss the confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court is media editor at SCOTUS blog, Katie Barlow. Ms. Barlow, thank you for taking the time to speak with us this evening.
Sure, my pleasure.
All right, just to start off, what does this appointment mean for the American public?
Well, it's certainly a historic moment. We have only had two Black justices on the Supreme Court, and Judge Jackson will become the first Black woman on the Supreme Court. She will also become the first former federal public defender who is a Supreme Court justice, which comes with it a wealth of experience that is unique and different from her predecessors on the bench. The federal bench in general has a lot of prosecutors, and the Biden administration had prioritized appointing judges who have a different legal background, and she has that different legal background and is what they were looking for. So her appointment is historic for a number of reasons, and that was solidified this afternoon in the Senate chamber with a vote of 53-47.
As you mentioned, she's the first Black woman to serve on the court and the first public defender. Based on these qualifications and her experience in the realm of judgeships, what can we expect from her on the bench?
Well, I think we can expect a measured justice who has a lot of experience as a trial judge. She has she's been on the bench since 2013 when she was appointed by President Obama in the district court, and she has served as a trial judge. She's seen criminal defendants come before her as a judge. She also worked with criminal defendants as a defender, and so that type of experience, both as a judge and as a lawyer, will inform how she writes her opinions and how she sees the facts of the case. It's also important talking about her unique set of experiences and her unique American background. When she participates as a justice, the justices, when they hear a case, they all go into a room, and it's called conference, and that's where they vote on cases after they hear them. And only the nine are allowed in. No staff members, no clerks, no secretaries, no one but the nine justices. In fact, now Judge Jackson, as the most junior justice, will be the one responsible for getting the door in that room. And so she will be one of nine voices, and her experience as the first Black woman, as somebody who's grown up in this country as a Black woman, but also as a public defender, also as a trial judge, her experience will inform her contributions to those discussions where she is only one of nine, and they will be making decisions in those cases that we hear and see in the news and listening to the Supreme Court do its work.
I think another thing I find interesting about her is that she has dealt with the criminal justice system on both sides, serving as a judge, and then she's also had family members who have been within the system itself. How do you think her background in this, you know, her extensive background, overall background in the criminal justice system will affect her opinions and affect how we see the Supreme Court making decisions when it comes to civil justice cases?
Well, you know, she actually touched on that during her confirmation hearing to the D.C. Circuit, the Court of Appeals, the Federal Court of Appeals here in Washington, D.C., and also most recently during her confirmation hearing, where she was talking about her experience as a public defender. She realized that a number of criminal defendants going through the justice system don't understand what's happening to them and why. They don't have a fulsome understanding of the laws, what's happening in the courtroom, what's happening when they're pleading. And she said that really informed her job as a trial judge, because she wanted to make sure that every defendant that came before her understood exactly what was happening and why, and understood the consequences of their actions and what was happening to them and why. Because she said when they didn't understand that, they became bitter about the system and they didn't have a fulsome understanding of why they were being treated that way. And so she wanted to make sure that they really understood when they came before her, and they were facing things like, you know, deprivation of liberty, going to prison, going to jail. And so she said that experience as a lawyer really informed her role as a judge. And I think that will continue to be the case as a justice. She can't, you know, take away that knowledge and experience that she's had as both a lawyer and a judge. And I think she'll continue to bring those experiences to bear in cases that come before the Supreme Court.
Now, there have been a lot of talk about the future of Roe v. Wade, especially as more states are passing restrictive abortion laws. What do you think the future of Roe v. Wade could be with her on the bench?
Well, I think we're going to get an answer to that question before she even takes the bench. The Supreme Court right now is considering a case that could overturn Roe v. Wade, and there are a number of legal courts who think there are 5 votes to either overturn Roe v. Wade or dramatically shift our understanding of a woman's right to choose to have an abortion in this country. And that decision will likely come down in June. And Judge Jackson is not going to take the bench until after the Supreme Court rises for summer recess, because Justice Breyer's retirement letter said he doesn't plan to retire until the end of this term, which means Justice Breyer will be the one voting in that case and others that the Supreme Court has already heard oral argument on. Now, that case is just going to determine whether individual states can restrict abortion essentially after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And the next step, or the likely next step, will be states passing laws that are short of that 15 weeks or that in some other way restrict access to abortion. We're seeing it already in various states. And so Judge Jackson could hear one of those cases that's perhaps further curtailing Roe from the case that the court is currently considering right now. But I think we're going to get an answer to your question before she even ascends to the high court.
Well, we will all be waiting the answer of that question, as it is something that's been highly talked about for years, and the conversation is only continuing to heighten. But I want to circle back to the confirmation hearings. And I remember Lindsey Graham saying that the Republicans would not have even given Judge Jackson a hearing. They called her very liberal, you know, a very far left choice that Biden selected. How do you view her on the political spectrum?
I found that comment by Senator Graham interesting, given that he voted in favor of confirming Judge Jackson to the D.C. Circuit just last year with the same record that she had when she went before the committee, save for a couple of Court of Appeals opinions, with the same trial judge record that she had. And so something to bear in mind during these confirmation hearings is they are a political process. The nominee is being voted on by politicians, often career politicians. And so statements like that and comments like that are part of what we talk about and are a part of, you know, a politician's job and expressing his or her sentiments or those who he or she represents. But those aren't necessarily, they certainly aren't the views of the nominee. And it's more the political swirling that is happening around the nominee. And she, I think, did her best to kind of avoid a lot of the political back and forth that was happening, including those types of comments.
All right, Ms. Barlow, well, that seems to be the end of our time today. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
A new Hyde Park resident is facing grand larceny charges after stealing from an elderly woman. 48-year-old Elizabeth Riley allegedly stole nearly $750,000 from a 91-year-old. Riley used the money for flights, beauty products, as well as other goods and services. She pleaded not guilty in her arraignment yesterday.
Police are searching for two men who shot a couple outside of Roosevelt Field Mall. The incident occurred outside Nordstrom last night around 6:30 p.m. The men engaged with words with the couple before one suspect fired three shots. The victims left the scene before police arrived. Both suspects are described as average build and were wearing black clothing with masks. The suspects left the scene in separate black four-door sedans. The mall went into lockdown after the shooting. All stores but Nordstrom reopened last night.
55 Stop and Shop pharmacies will now have a pair of COVID-19 antiviral medications available to customers. Children who are at least 12 years old and 88 pounds are eligible for Paxlovid medication, while adults who are at least 18 years old are eligible for Molnupiravir medication. Sick patients are advised to stay home while a friend or relative picks up their medication. The patient must be prescribed the medication by their healthcare provider with no need to pay out of pocket. There is also a curbside pickup option available.
The Long Island Tabletop Gaming Expo is having an event where participants can role-play, play board games, or challenge others with card games at the Cradle of Aviation Museum in Garden City this Saturday. The games will be broken down into various areas where guests can sign up to play different styles of games together. If you are a beginner, do not fear, as instructions and guidance will be provided by Game Masters. The event will open from 10 a.m. and close at 11 p.m.
The city of Long Beach is set to receive nearly $67 million in federal funds to convert a wastewater treatment plant into a pump station. This will connect Long Beach with the Nassau County sewer system in Bay Park. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is covering more than 90% of the project to replace the sewage treatment plant, which was damaged during Superstorm Sandy in 2012. Nassau County legislators voted to approve $66 million in bonds for the project in 2019, but the funds were never used, and the county is now being reimbursed by the federal government. Senator Chuck Schumer says he is proud of the Biden administration to make this decision. The project started last spring and is expected to be completed in the next 2 years.
Coming up after your Newsline Entertainment Report, a hip-hop star is charged with first-degree manslaughter, and we discuss in greater detail Ketanji Brown Jackson's confirmation with a law professor. But first, your Newsline traffic update with Nicholas Cavello-Macchia. WRHU News Time is 5:47.
Newsline Traffic.
There's still moderate traffic on the Southern State Parkway heading eastbound, as the brakes are pumping on the LIE on Woodhaven Boulevard, and there's moderate traffic at Hempstead Turnpike near Hofstra University. Moving over to the rails, there is no scheduled service on Belmont Park, and all lines are on or close to schedule. Up in the sky, there are ground delays at JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark. But as always, please check with your carrier before heading out. It's currently 51 degrees and rainy outside our studios in Hempstead. Expect temperatures to drop to a cool 48 degrees. Thankfully, you can put away the umbrellas tomorrow and expect sunny skies throughout tomorrow with a high of 60 degrees and a low of 45 degrees. With your Newsline traffic update, I'm Nicholas Cavello-Macchia, and I'll be back with one more update and your extended weather forecast coming up later in the broadcast.
Newsline Entertainment.
A brand new Coachella lineup was released only 11 days before the first leg of the festival is set to take place, and a few changes could be spotted right away. The biggest change, Ye, formerly Kanye West, no longer holds a headlining spot for the festival. Swedish House Mafia and The Weeknd will now be taking over where Ye was supposed to be. A representative for Ye has not yet commented on the lineup change, and neither has the publicist for Coachella. A variety of TV shows and movies have been or are set to be filmed on location all around Long Island. A reality TV show entitled Serving the Hamptons focuses in on Zach Erdem's restaurant, 75 Main, and revolves around the restaurant's young staff and the various situations they find themselves in. Serving the Hamptons premieres today on Discovery Plus. A movie adaptation of the thriller Leave the World Behind filmed in the village of Lloyd Harbor this past week. The Netflix movie has a talented cast comprising of Julia Roberts and Mahershala Ali. And finally, NBC's hit show The Blacklist returned to Long Beach and Little Beach to film for the show's 9th season. This isn't the first time they've been here, as the show has regularly filmed all over Long Island in the past. And up last, Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker have officially gotten married. Well, not officially.
Kourtney Kardashian posted pictures of them post-Grammy Awards at a wedding chapel in Las Vegas with none other than an Elvis Presley impersonator to officiate their wedding. Kardashian captioned the post as follows. Found these in my camera roll. Once upon a time in a land far, far away, Las Vegas, at 2 a.m., after an epic night and a little tequila, a queen and her handsome king ventured out to the only open chapel with an Elvis and got married. With no license. Practice makes perfect. If you didn't catch it, the two did not obtain a marriage license before their excursion, so the wedding does not technically count. But I'm sure we'll see more about it on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. For your Newsline Entertainment Update, I'm Lindsay Hill.
WRHU News Time is 5:50. Our thanks to Lindsay and Nicholas for those reports. Joining us now to discuss the confirmation of Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is Associate Professor at Case Western Reserve University Law School, Aisha Bell Hardaway. Professor Hardaway, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So to start off, what was your reaction to the confirmation?
Gratitude, excitement, joy. I think today's final confirmation marks what I hope is a day of celebration. Also for Justice Brown Jackson, obviously, her family, and the millions of Americans who supported her nomination.
That's great. Now, what does this confirmation mean for law students or people wanting to go into law? And do you believe this will inspire more people of color to enter into law school?
I think it's important, obviously, that we acknowledge, you know, that today also marks a time when the next generation of young Black girls will grow up in a world where a Black woman has a seat on America's highest court. Obviously, that's very different from the reality, the legal landscape that I entered into, more than two decades ago, and certainly the one that my mother or my grandmother would have ever witnessed or observed. I think we have to acknowledge the reality that young girls, young Black girls, and also, children of all races, their perspectives and their realities have to be shifted based on what they will learn about the composition of the Supreme Court. It's no longer, a space that Black women don't occupy. And so I think in a lot of ways, to answer your question, being representation and seeing people that look like you in different places absolutely does create the opportunity for you to think in your mind about what's possible for your future, your destiny, and your dreams.
The Supreme Court will now have greater representation of what we see in America itself, and that's truly remarkable. But what has been the reaction from the public?
Well, I think we heard that 72% of Americans did not approve of the way that the confirmation hearings were held, right? They didn't like the tone and tenor of the confirmation hearings. I think that that's important for us to keep in mind, in terms of whether or not this hyper-politicization, right, that we've been dealing with for the last couple of decades at least, right, for Supreme Court nominations is real and is also unpalatable for Americans across the country. And so I think it's important for us to understand that there is at least the majority of Americans are not liking the tone and tenor of how these things are playing out. And it's important. I hope that our leaders, our elected officials are paying attention to that.
Now, you mentioned the tone of the hearings and the current tone being seen throughout the public regarding Judge Jackson's confirmation. Can you explain a little bit further in detail what that looks like to people who may have not caught the hearings or are up to date on what's happening?
Well, I mean, I think we saw four or five senators during the confirmation hearings, the Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings, who really stepped outside of understanding Justice Brown Jackson's, or at the time Judge Brown Jackson's, judicial philosophy, her approach to hearing cases, her judicial record, and how she would move forward if she were confirmed, how she would handle cases that come before the Supreme Court should she be confirmed. Instead, we heard conversations and questions around critiques of what is being called critical race theory, hyper focus on a very small number of cases that she would have heard or did hear during her time on the federal district court bench. I think there were 7 cases out of over 100, and really just a lot of focus on whether or not she was someone that this country should fear, should she be confirmed. And I think those things, her being asked to comment on, you know, transgender policy decisions or potential laws, just really felt outside the bounds of what you normally would hear being asked of a Supreme Court justice. And I think that is, if that's the detail you were looking for, I hope so. I think that is what many of the Americans who disapprove of how the confirmation hearings were handled were referring to.
So going into the confirmation hearings, going into the confirmation itself, Judge Jackson already knew that she would most likely be confirmed should she had full Democrat support. She would only need one Republican to then support her confirmation. And so what was the purpose of this tone, of these questions, if we already were foreseeing a confirmation?
I'm sorry, could you say that last part again?
What was the purpose of asking these questions that you said, yes, you know, you were bringing up? What was the purpose of, absolutely, you know, having this tone?
Yeah, I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, in this current moment, right, we're midterm elections, it is really very clear that certain politicians were using their role on the Senate Judiciary Committee, right, to build up and speak to their base, not the folks that are in Washington, not even the folks that will be engaged in Supreme Court cases, but instead to the folks who are going to be voting in elections during this midterm. And that's the hyper-politicization that I was mentioning earlier, right, is that all of the demonizing and the othering, if you will, of Judge Brown Jackson at that time really was in the vein of drumming up votes. We know, unfortunately, in this country, for certain politicians, racism is the highest currency for netting votes, and we saw a lot of that on display during those confirmation hearings.
All right, Professor Hardaway, thank you so much for joining us today and unpacking some of what we saw during Judge Jackson's confirmation. That's all the time we have for today. Again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. You have a wonderful day.
You as well. All right. Co-founder of Grandmaster Flash, Kid Creole, was found guilty of stabbing a homeless man yesterday. Kid Creole, also known as Nathaniel Glover, was charged with first-degree manslaughter. The attack happened in 2017 when Glover stabbed 55-year-old John Jolly with a steak knife. While Glover's attorney argued for self-defense, prosecutors say it was a verbal argument that led to the stabbing. Glover's sentencing is scheduled for May 4th.
In a decade-long campaign of abusing students at Sarah Lawrence College, a man from New York is now facing multiple charges. Lawrence Ray's convictions include, but are not limited to, money laundering, sex trafficking, forced labor, and extortion. Ray moved into his then-sophomore daughter's dorm room back in 2010. From there, he then proceeded to set his sights on vulnerable campus students in many different ways. A Manhattan jury found Ray guilty of every single one of his charges.
Media critic Eric Bolhert was tragically killed in a bike accident in New Jersey yesterday. The founder of The Press One, writer for The Rolling Stones and Media Matters for America, was riding his bike when he was struck by a commuter train near his home in Montclair. He also frequently appeared on television and radio programs as a contributor about media issues and ethics. Bolhert specialized in exposing disinformation and holding fellow journalists accountable. He is survived by his wife and 2 children.
Runners from Russia and Belarus who were set to compete in this year's Boston Marathon will no longer be allowed to do so, per an announcement from the Boston Marathon Association that was released yesterday. The exclusion also extends to Russian or Belarusian athletes set to compete in the BAA's 5K event. However, the ban will not affect Russian or Belarusian sprinters who are not residents of those countries. While non-residents will be allowed to compete, they will not be allowed to run under their country's flag.
That'll do it for tonight's edition of Newsline. Many thanks to the entire WRHU News team. Our engineer this evening is my co-host, Anne-Marie Lepard.
Thanks for listening to Newsline, only here on your three-time Marconi Award-winning radio station, 88.7 FM, Radio Hofstra University.
For Newsline, I'm Lindsay Hill.
And I'm Anne-Marie Lepard.
Thanks for listening.
And have a great night.
Newsline is a presentation of Long Island's largest radio news team,
comprised of nationally recognized student broadcasters,
winners of numerous awards from the Associated Press,
Society of Professional Journalists,
Radio Television News Directors Association,
Hearst Corporation,
Long Island Press Club,
and other prestigious organizations.
Newsline is researched and produced by student journalists using the Hofstra News Hub,
cutting-edge multimedia news gathering technology,
located in Hofstra's School of Communication. To learn more about News Hub and the Hofstra School of Communication, log on to hofstra.edu.
To learn more about News Hub and the Hofstra School of Communication, log on to wrhu.org.
WRHU is